From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available on iTunes.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. This week, news from the Carmel Symphony Orchestra and the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, a new style of house concert, and David Amram dishes on his decades-long friendship with Dan Wakefield. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You won't want to miss a word right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Want to go to a concert at a mysterious venue? So Far Sounds has you covered a little later on today's show. But first, this season, the Indianapolis Opera wants you to follow it around town for its 2017-2018 Season of Delights, and Artistic Director David Starkey came in to explain. So I'd like to start with, how do you come up with the balance to choose a season? You obviously want to appeal to multiple audiences and not repeat a bunch of presentations that you've just done. Where do you start?
Well, coming new to the job, there was a lot of research that had been done by predecessors. You also have a very historic company that has been able to be very successful in the marketplace. However, as we all know, things are shifting, and those market shifts have said that people are quite interested in the diversity beyond the traditional repertory. But that is the core of what we need to be able to attend to. So that traditional presentation this season will be La Traviata, one of the staples of the Verdi repertory. For us to then venture into what is called the Lyric Theater repertory, we will be now presenting a presentation of South Pacific, following up on the success of Man of La Mancha this past season that was at the Schrott. We will return to the Schrott Performing Arts Center on the campus of Butler University with a very dynamic presentation of South Pacific. And then we are still in development of how we are going to continue to further our contemporary presentations that we have become quite known for over the last several years. And those are sometimes taking a little bit longer because it's not just the picking of something, because we're really trying to work on something that is really new and it's evolving. So we're still pursuing some ideas around an opera that connects with Muhammad Ali.
My gosh.
And we have been in consultation with the Ali Center in Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
And that is taking some really wonderful time because we're getting to know each other, and it's an evolution. And so, you know, those timing issues are not necessarily just picking something off of a list.
Sure.
And we really want to be part of a great conversation as others are doing in the contemporary repertory. So that's the balance that we believe really represents our market and moving forward is the contemporary, the Lyric Theater, and the traditional.
I'm fighting my impulse to ask a whole bunch of questions about what you just said, including, oh, I'm salivating over the composer, but we'll save that for when it comes to fruition. It strikes me that you must have something that's the equivalent of project management software at your disposal, too, because you have to line up venues, coordinate them with the soloists that you want, coordinate them with every other part of the performance, the costumer, the scenic designer. How do you wrap your arms around all those details?
Well, actually, I find the software approach or the analytical approach on that side to be actually quite limiting, because I think that the relationship that you build with different people in the industry is far more powerful. And that's that collaborative energy that is really part of the performing arts mindset. So being in the business for now 25 years, there are relationships that are just ready to rise to the surface. There are those that you've invested into, and they're now going to take on a different kind of context. They may move in a different way. You know, so just being inside of that, you know, we sort of call it our pipeline. And so I've been very excited and welcomed to bring in a lot of the relationships that I had from other parts of the country,
sure.
As we all do. But then really connecting with a deep pocket of individuals and relationships here, reconnecting with the symphony, reconnecting with Indiana University School of Music, Ball State, Butler University. You know, it's just going deeper with them and finding when those things really come to the surface, but then also understanding that you got to listen to your public. And I think a software program doesn't listen very well sometimes. I think that personal one-on-one communication. And I really encourage everybody to reach out to myself and my staff and really share their opinions and their ideas and their perspective, because that is really what's the most powerful influence to our future is people's engagement with us.
I'm curious, you referenced some surveying and some essentially crowdsourcing about opinions about what people want to hear. Was it a particular demographic that said, yeah, we want to hear grand opera, but we want to hear things that are a little bit closer to musical theater, a little bit more accessible as well? Was that a more traditional audience? Was that a younger audience, an outsider audience? Or is it that easy to categorize?
I think it could be that easy to categorize, because I think that I'll use an example that I just experienced this weekend. So I was watching our Indianapolis public TV station on Saturday night.
Thank you.
And I was observing them presenting the live concert from 1981 of Journey. And I grew up in the era where Journey was literally my band. I mean, that's the one. And so now here I am years later, and we are using Journey from a classical standpoint. And I completely agree with that. And that is the way we look at lyric theater, the Sound of Musics, the South Pacifics, the West Side Stories. But why do we find them to be so sort of historic now for us is because of the similar nature of what they represent. And then we connect those things back to, we connect Journey back to the Beatles. We connect the Beatles back to the rock and roll performers before them. And it's a lineage. And there's a heritage of how we come to those things. So, yes, the market had some substantial research done on an analytical standpoint, but I think we can very quickly equate it to the way it connects to the way that we work with our public radio stations, classical music and jazz and rock and roll and orchestral and, you know, contemporary theater and opera. We all come along. Each generation cycles its way through history, and we bring our contemporaneous along with us, and it eventually will, if it sticks, it'll become classical. And I believe that that's something to really trust and believe in.
Tell me about the challenge of putting operas in three very different venues, La Traviata at the Tarkington at the
Yes.
Center for the Performing Arts, South Pacific at the Schrott Center for the Arts on Butler's campus, and finally Magic Flute at Hilbert Circle Theater.
So the yes, that is one of the great challenges. But I also believe it is one of the great ideas that we are doing opera all over town. That's why we're calling it a season of delights, because we want people to explore and to get to know their community as we journey with them.
The Indianapolis Opera's David Starkey. Tickets are on sale for their new season, which includes Verdi's La Traviata, Rodgers and Hammerstein's South Pacific, and Mozart's The Magic Flute. Get all the notes at indieopera.org. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. There's a newish entity that can be described as a global music movement, a collective, and a community. It's called SoFar Sounds, and it offers its brand of intimate musical performances to Indianapolis audiences. But without a permanent venue spot, how do they do it? WFYI's Melissa Davis has the story.
After driving down a street on the Near East Side, I walked north, trying to find an address listed in a recently received email for a SoFar Sounds indie show. As I noticed a collection of cars and a group of folks clustered on a small porch, I figured I'd found the latest location.
Hi, Melissa.
Nice to meet you.
My pleasure. Nice to meet you also.
There we go.
You look like you're taking notes.
A So Far Sounds ambassador instructs us to turn off our cell phones and refrain from posting on social media. The audience quickly begins to stash away their mobile devices, and singer-songwriter Crescent Ulmer begins her performance in the living room. So Far Sounds started out in Europe, and the idea quickly spread to international audiences. So Far Sounds Indianapolis lead ambassador Kiefer Berry tells the story.
So Far Sounds in London in 2009 when a few friends were going out to a club to see their friend play music. And that night especially seemed to be very wonky for the musicians. You know, they're a full house of people talking, of people on their phones, of people drinking copious amounts of alcohol, which none of those things are inherently bad, but when you're in a center that's supposed to be sort of a presentation for an artist, you know, it's like those things don't really coincide. You know, you wouldn't do those at any other sort of presentation of some sort of expert or anything like that, you know? So they said, how can we make this better for our friend? You know, not even necessarily artists all in general, but our friend. So they invited people over to their flat and did the same show, had the same act, played in the middle of the living room. The difference was that there were 10 people there. And these 10 people all listened attentively. None of them were on their phones. They all were talking with the artists afterwards, and they made a real, genuine connection. And our founders said, all right, well, let's do this again and again. So it spread across Europe very easily, very quickly, and the idea spread United States and Asia. And now this small idea of, like, that is essentially a house show, a secret house show, if you will, is now in over 300 cities around the world, doing the same thing that we do here in Indianapolis.
Close attention to the music is key at a So Far Sounds show. There's even a no social media policy in play for audience members.
Well, it confuses a lot of people. I mean, we're all used to going to our shows and documenting our lives, however you do it, through your Snapchat or Instagram stories or Facebook stories now. Photos, photos, photos. It's almost like you're watching your concert through your phone. And that takes you out of the moment, doesn't it? So Far is all about our artists, right? And how best to experience an artist than being fully committed in that moment to their music. So we ask that, you know, our guests keep their phone in their pocket, at least while our musicians are performing. We want you guys, as audience members, to sit down and actually listen. Be still and listen is the tagline for So Far Sounds.
So why is this show happening in a three-bedroom home in a residential neighborhood instead of a coffee house or a nightclub?
Even at an intimate venue, there's still these overarching responsibilities to be a business. You know, they have to sell wares, sell goods to make sure it was worth their business's time to open it up for those artists, as well as making sure that people are coming in to not only see the show, but be customers and all these sort of things. So there's more responsibility going on that I don't want to say make it less pure, because like running your own business in a local company is awesome. We at So Far love it. But when you're doing a So Far show, everything is focused on one thing. I mean, and even when we're doing shows in coffee shops and venue, we're asking that they're not making drinks during the show. We're asking that stuff's not going on, that everyone is watching the music. And you might not necessarily have that in a traditional coffee shop show. An owner doesn't want to shh someone. They don't want to kick them out when they might buy more coffee. And that's totally valid. But we don't have that problem.
Right after the show, I asked a few audience members about their experience at So Far. This So Far Sounds show was a first for Matthew and Tiffany.
One of my friends went to a So Far show and she told me about it, so I started following them on Instagram and then saw this one and signed up and we got to come, so it was cool. And I brought him.
I'm a plus one.
What'd you think of it?
Oh, it was awesome. We didn't know what we were coming into. I had no concept. I kind of had a funniest acoustic thing in my mind. Be like, oh, am I going to like this or not? But they said it well. Indiana people enjoying the arts. I loved it.
Getting your invite to a So Far Sounds show isn't too complicated. It's a click to their website to apply, and if you're accepted, you'll find an email with all the info. And So Far Sounds city leader Kiefer Berry is going to make it easy for the Art of the Matter listeners to attend their first show.
Send me, if you sign up for So Far because you hear this, leave me a note. I'll make sure you get accepted.
WFYI's Melissa Davis. You can sign up to attend a SOFAR show at sofarsounds.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and later this hour, David Amram has a soft spot for Dan Wakefield. But right now, Eat Drink Indie's Jolene Ketzenberger talks with the Scholars Inn's Lyle Feigenbaum.
Tell me about the current situation with Scholars Inn.
Sure. So Scholars Inn, 717 North College in Bloomington, my wife and I, we bought that building back in 1996.
Wow.
And we wanted to open back then. I had just moved back here from New York City where I was an actor, which meant that I waited tables at a lot of cool restaurants. We wanted to open a New York-style restaurant in Bloomington. And everyone said, "You're crazy. Don't do it."
Yeah, I was wondering what the response was.
Bloomington will never support an upscale restaurant, one that's specifically focused on dinner and a Sunday brunch. So you
opened it anyway?
We did. And thank God we did, because it was wonderful. I mean, it was, while the restaurant industry, as you know, is not an easy industry, we had a very successful run for many, many years.
So let's go back 20 years and tell me what made you decide to open the fine dining type of restaurant in Bloomington and how that went.
My wife and I love to entertain. To this day, I can't tell you how many times we had a crazy busy New Year's Eve at Scholars Inn to throw a party at our house right after. We love to see people happy. It's that simple. And so by creating a restaurant, we were able to fulfill that need.
So what was it like in 1996, 1997?
Well, we started off as the Scholars Inn Dessert Cafe and Wine Bar.
Okay, now I kind of remember that.
That's right.
Right?
So because the kitchen was small. The kitchen was, the listeners can't see this room, but this room is probably 15 by 15. That's the size of our kitchen. So that's what we had to do. And we just pushed the envelope. And so six months later.
How was the reaction to that? A dessert cafe and wine bar specifically.
It went okay. And then after a couple of years of moderate success, we said, okay, let's blow out the upstairs. And that's when we became very successful.
So you have a very well established name. And so you're kind of changing it up a little bit, right?
Yeah, it's necessary. It's absolutely necessary. Look, as we talked before we got on the air, the climate in Bloomington and the restaurant scene has definitely changed. And you have to be able to relate not only to people who want to come for special occasions, right, but more importantly, to the everyday crowd. And there's so much foot traffic around Scholars Inn now. If we're purely a destination, then we're missing the boat. That being said, the food will be better than ever, and the prices will be more affordable than ever.
Well, now that's very interesting. Why is that? Why a shift away from the sort of special occasion dining?
Because you can't survive. There's just no way you can survive.
So that's the thing, right?
And you know, if it's a good restaurant, it can be good every day and good for a special occasion. And we'll also have the private party space, particularly the upstairs, that keeps that separation. And I don't know what the full design is, but I know the parameters that we've laid out for the designer. And we want people to be able to come there two, three times a week if they want. Doesn't mean they have to eat a full dinner every time, but whether it's to have a cocktail at the bar, and I can assure you the bars will be changing and will be a focal point of the restaurant. Everything will be fresh from the cocktails to the food and very approachable and, like I said, affordable. I don't want to get into too much exactly because, again, I don't know specifically, but I do know small plates will certainly be on the menu.
You can hear Jolene Ketzenberger's Eat, Drink, Indie Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The new music director and conductor of the Carmel Symphony Orchestra starts her job this month. Jana Himes has been with the Williamsburg Symphony since 2004 and the Maine Pro Musica Orchestra since 2008. And WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer talked with her about her new gig and a type of music director search that's gaining momentum. Jill?
Well, this wasn't your normal search either. The CSO actually had a committee. They looked nationwide, and then they brought their three finalists to the Palladium and then had them perform with the orchestra in front of an audience, which is kind of unusual. And then the committee got feedback from the audience and the musicians. And with their impressions, they selected the person that they feel will best lead the orchestra. And that is Jana Himes. And of course, she is no stranger to Indianapolis. She was actually with the ISO for nearly 20 years ago. And I spoke with her on the phone just a few days after she got the good news on the Carmel position.
It sounds so cliche, but it's a great honor. I didn't know really much about the orchestra. I didn't know anything about the orchestra before I got there. And there was just a very natural connection right from day one that was it was palpable. It's just really pretty extraordinary. And I had a great time. I mean, we worked hard. We worked on a lot of detail, and it was a very busy week with a lot of interviews and meetings and meals and, of course, rehearsals and the concert. But it felt very, very natural.
You know, you've been to Indianapolis before because you were with the ISO for a while, correct?
That's right. I was the associate conductor of the Indianapolis Symphony when Raymond Lepard was there. But, you know, I was pretty green compared to where I am now. You know, that was like 15 years ago, so 17 years ago, and I was the number two. You know, it's funny with conducting because, you know, you're not great in your 20s. And I know that there are major orchestras hiring people in their 20s. I get it. But the truth is it, you know, you need to have some years under your belt to really be good at this craft. I was very talented in my 20s. I could conduct things. I could do well. But after living for a little bit and experiencing what we do in life, I think you bring that to your music making, and it makes a whole lot of difference.
What will your relationship be with the community and with the orchestra, too, in helping take the Carmel Symphony forward?
There is an artistic committee and an orchestra committee, I believe, and they will be able to, you know, talk about programming and some things that they would like to see happen. I've already heard a lot of that in the week that I was there. I'm open to hearing, you know, their ideas of where we should be going. I have certainly my ideas of where we can go, but I need some time really to learn the community. And you know, it's really what the community is able to handle and what they want. I mean, when I was in Carmel for that week, Kenny Rogers, Kenny G, and the Boston Pops were playing, and then we were playing. And I was there for like 10 days. That's a lot of performances in 1 week. And that was pretty exciting because it shows that the community really is an art destination, and I absolutely love that. And, of course, the venue, the Palladium, is spectacular. So I don't think we're going to have a problem with the support. I think we need to figure out where it is we want to go in 3 years. You know, what's our artistic vision? And I do that regularly with the other orchestras I work with. And so, you know, we're here right now, but where do we really want to be? And it appears that in my career I'm a builder. So I other than, you know, being like with Indianapolis where I was the associate, when I've been the music director, I've been able to have a clear vision of where we want to go. What are our artistic goals? And we've been pretty successful with that. So I look forward to bringing that to Carmel and working with everybody and hearing, you know, their ideas as well as implementing my own.
Jana says she is going to spend most of this summer getting to know the community and the musicians a little bit better, but she's very, very excited to take the CSO into very new and exciting directions. And, of course, this upcoming season is already planned, so her real first season will be the 2018-2019 season. That's next year. But she will be conducting for the very first time as the leader of the Carmel Symphony Orchestra on October the 14th at the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, and I'm pretty sure tickets are probably on sale for that show right now.
And we'll remind you about that because it'd be great to have a sold-out audience to welcome her back to Indianapolis.
Beautiful facility. She's done some really exciting moving things out east, and nice to kind of have her back around the hood again.
Fantastic. Well, there are some other things going on a little sooner than October, and we'll tell you about some of them on our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
Speaking of concerts, on Friday, July 14th, Best Deal Day, if you're keeping track, although that's not the reason for this concert. It's the Crystal House concert, and it includes music, song, dance, and performances from countries that the Crystal House Learning Centers are located in: India, Mexico, South Africa, and right here in the United States. And the performers include Grammy Award winner Sylvia McNair and ISO Concertmaster Zach Depew. That's all coming up on Friday, July 14th. If you just Google Crystal House Concert, you'll get all the details.
On Saturday, July the 8th, the Indy Parks are holding their Pack the Parks Day at several parks around the city, including at Garfield Park, and that's where you can take in a free performance of Parade 2017. Now, this is a musical that was put together by Rebecca Pappas. She is a Ball State University professor. She's a choreographer as well. And the No Exit Performance Group is going to be collaborating with her. And this is kind of an homage to communities and parades from many, many years gone by. And there'll be two free performances at 10 a.m. and at 7 p.m. in Garfield Park. And they will start in the Sunken Gardens, and you're going to kind of walk and interact with the actors and the dancers in this. But it'd be a lot of fun for everybody in the family, and it's free.
If you're listening to us on Saturday morning, there's something going on tomorrow afternoon, July 2nd, that sounds just really fascinating. It's put on by something called Crown of Eternity, and it is a sort of a performance but also an experience that uses sound to heal you with what they call a wall of vibration, which is described as a sound cage with 12 gongs, metal singing bowls, bells, mountain dulcimers. They'll help silence your mind and, as they call it, entrain the brain into a spontaneous state of deep meditation. Don't worry, you don't need any experience. You don't have to have meditated or done yoga or anything. This is taking place at the Athenaeum Auditorium from 4 to 6 on Sunday afternoon, July 2nd. Last year when they did this, the show sold out, so if this intrigues you, get online right away and just Google Crown of Eternity or go to the Athenaeum.org. webpage.
And there is a new exhibit that is now up at the Indianapolis Museum of Contemporary Art, or IMOCA. Their gallery is in the Cityway space down there at the Alexander Hotel. And this is a brand new show by artist Hesop Yoon, and it's black and white murals, very large, which is very fitting for that gallery. If you've been there before, you know it's got big, large walls and beautiful open spaces, so it's a wonderful place to see a show. And her exhibit is all about memory and perception, and it will be up through the end of the year, so you have plenty of time to go see it, but it's a great place to go check out on a first Friday, too, because the artist will be there and ready to answer your questions as well at IMOCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art in the Cityway Gallery downtown.
The JCC is playing host to the second annual Indianapolis Israeli Film Festival, Sunday, July 9th through Thursday, July 13th. You can see 6 films in 5 days. All films are subtitled, so if you don't speak Hebrew, don't worry. War, friendship, cooking, a famous basketball team, gender roles, the subject matter could not be more diverse. And you can find out about that by going to jccindy.org and looking for Israeli Film Festival.
And right now, underway at Easley Winery, it's Groovin' in the Garden every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 5 p.m. The music is free, but you can buy a bottle of wine, get something to eat, and just jam away the afternoon outside at Easley Winery, downtown Indianapolis.
Sounds good to me. And you know, we have so many more things we'd like to tell you about, but we're out of time. But don't forget, you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide. The Arts Council of Indianapolis is Indie Arts Guide, or join us next week for that calendar we call What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Intimate, classic, and original is the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra's clever take on their acronym ICO, but it's more than a marketing slogan. Maestro Matthew Kramer and his team take very seriously the charge to perform repertoire not to be found on big symphony orchestras' set lists. Executive Director Elaine Eckert came in, along with Maestro Kramer, to tempt us with some highlights of the new season.
Matthew, I want to start with you. This is your, is this your third
full The beginning
season?
Of my third, you're
Congratulations.
Right.
Congratulations. That was fast.
Oh, it goes by quickly.
What are some of the factors you take into consideration when you start planning a season?
Well, I look for a diversity, given that we have seven subscription concerts, one of which is the Messiah. You know, we really have six concerts in which to spread a wealth of music around. We have the silent movie now going over 10 years. That takes up another slot, and so you're really left with five. I try to program as much over a span of time. You know, we really go back pre-Baroque even to contemporary music. You take into account composers from different nationalities, different styles. So you really have to be very, very creative in how you put everything together. I put programs together, and sometimes I sit on them for a season or two before I find a slot for them to fit. In this case, I'm very proud of the season coming up because it does have that diversity. Wonderful composers whose names are recognizable, others perhaps who aren't but should be, works that people are familiar with and probably works that people will be hearing for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And Elaine, I know that while he's the music director and the artistic head, you have to work together because at some point he's going to propose something and you're going to say, holy mackerel, I looked into getting the rights to that, or I looked into that soloist, and let's go back to the drawing board, right?
Yeah, the budget can be a real bubble burster. I guess that's a good way of putting
Darn
it.
That.
But, you know, because we, you know, we know we try to stick to the mission in terms of the number of musicians that we use. We try to play repertoire that's really Matthew programs repertoire that really is within the chamber orchestra size. So that helps. Considerably.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then I'm sure Matthew's going to tell us about it. There are a few things that we're doing that are going to stretch the budget and give us some new production challenges that are going to be a lot of fun and should be really rewarding. So then the next, you know, part of my job is to fund the dream. As long as we are really serving the mission, then part of my job is to fund the dream.
That should be on your business card.
What do you do?
Great summer. I fund the dream.
Yeah.
And I love that you're, you do bring in soloists from all over the place and interesting people. We're kind of almost bookending the season with two locals, Angela Brown, who will be featured in Knoxville Summer of 1915, and then Chaba Erday, who will be featured in the James Aikman Viola Concerto in April. All other things considered, do you try to look for local talent?
Well, we always do, and that's one of the great things about the Chamber Orchestra is that we've always been a longstanding arts collaborator with other organizations in the city. So we have world-class talent right here in Indianapolis. Angela, we're delighted to have her back with the Chamber Orchestra. Within our orchestra, we have soloists like Chaba. In addition to that, the American Pianist Association and the International Violin Competition have always provided us superb talent, and we'll be featuring them this season as well. And, of course, we can bring in talent from outside of the area, too. We opened last season with Christopher O'Reilly, for example. So, you know, given the number of concerts that we do a season, there's no shortage of exceptional artists to feature.
Tell me about those budget stretchers Elaine referred to.
No, Elaine, I'm sure I probably keep her up at night at times with ideas. But that's the great thing about our working relationship together is that she's very knowledgeable about the artistic side of the orchestra, whereas I try to educate myself with previous experience about budgets and, you know, what really is and is not possible in the course of one season. And we, you know, that's the great thing about it. We just throw out the idea, and if it doesn't work for this particular season or that particular season, we'll find a way to make it happen. And to end our season in May 2018 with a semi-staged concert version of Kiss Me Kate, the 70th anniversary of that Cole Porter classic, that's an example of how we've really had to sit down and work on the budget, figure out how to make you know, things meet, but at the same time have an exceptionally high artistic caliber, which with the cast that we're putting together and the production value, I'm sure that we will have.
Well, what a crowd pleaser.
Well, there's another local in that cast that I think we should mention, and that is Ben Davis, who is a local vocalist who will be singing the male role in Kiss Me, Kate.
What a treat.
So, yeah, what a treat. He's got a fabulous voice for, and I just, like, as luck would have it, he did Kiss Me, Kate in London.
Wow.
So, you know, when we started researching, you know, who to hire for this, and we came across that, I said, that's the guy.
The stars aligned.
Yeah. I mean, not only have I heard him sing and his voice will just melt you, but he's local and he's making an international career of it. So we have a lot of talent there's a lot of talent that's come out of the Midwest, out of Indianapolis, but also in the environs. So that's kind of fun.
Elaine Eckert is Executive Director of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra, and Matthew Kramer is its Music Director. You can learn about their full 2017-2018 season at icomusic.org, and tickets are on sale today. David Amram is an American music legend who's written and recorded movie soundtracks, including the original Manchurian Candidate and Splendor in the Grass. He's also written orchestral pieces and opera and jazz and what we now call world music, but he started it decades before we coined that phrase. His resume includes the sorts of milestones a traditional composer boasts, like being the composer in residence at the New York Philharmonic, but he's definitely kept some non-traditional company as well, working with the likes of Bob Dylan, Jack Kerouac, and Indy's own Dan Wakefield. Maestro Amram was in town last month for a concert at the Jazz Kitchen and an Uncle Dan Story Hour as well. I rang him up to talk about his friendship with Dan Wakefield, which spans more than six decades.
Do you remember one of your first meetings with Dan Wakefield?
Well, Dan and I first kind of crossed paths at the White Horse Tavern.
Oh, what a great place.
Yeah, extensively. It was an amazing place where the author James Baldwin and the folk singers, the Clancy Brothers, and local firemen, policemen, checker, champion players, devoted beer drinkers, students, anybody would come and hang out. And there was a back room where you could get a crash course in art, politics, education, how to survive in New York. It was like so many of those little places in the 50s and ones that I've been to when in Indianapolis, like the Red Key,
yeah,
are places where you get a sense of neighborhood, community, family, adventure, and mostly a chance, especially as a very young person, which Dad and I were then, 60 years ago, a chance to get educated by being around some accomplished people, all of whom were sharing their spirit with you. It was like a small town within a big city. There was a lot of small towns. Almost every block had its own little neighborhood, its own little town. It was a wonderful, wonderful thing. That's one of the reasons it was such a joy to come back to Indianapolis to see Dan again. And all these years later, we were pretty much the same, and also realized, both rejoiced in that celebration that small was beautiful, and that neighborhoods, families, friendship, hanging out, and having some time off from your job just to be human was a real valuable and important thing to have done.
Your hearts haven't changed. A few decades have passed, but your hearts are the same.
That's exactly right. And that's what's so beautiful. That's why it's so wonderful. And it's such a thrill to see, to go and see with Dan Wakefield Park. We have some great pictures of that, which I'll treasure. And my son had the time of his life because he met Dan when he was a little boy. Now he's 33. But when he was just a little, just a little kid, he remembered meeting Dan and some people that I knew from way back then. And I always liked him. And then to be able to come to Indianapolis to see where Dan was from, see that park named after him, be able to be part of that wonderful program that Dan presented, and to play while Dan was reading was really, really a beautiful thing.
Yeah. There was something that you and Dan and Jack Kerouac and so many other people shared, and, you know, Dan, of course, chronicled it beautifully in New York in the 50s, but there was a kind of a magical chemistry that happened among you. You were all so generous with one another, each in your own art form, but sharing, as you say, how to live, the principles of life, and the how do you account for that magic?
Well, that's because we were the recipients of people older than us who did that for us to anybody, as long as you were sincere and had some kind of decent manners. And that was a given. That wasn't something where you had to take a course in generosity or join a cult or have a guru or a dope dealer that would tell you what you needed to do in life to feel good. This was just something that was there in the atmosphere. And and 3 weeks ago, when we had that great young saxophonist, Sophie, and her wonderful band come, the same feeling was there, and Dan and I were talking, and I said, you know, Dan mentioned there's this great young saxophone player, and I met her and her husband and her beautiful baby, and she lives on a little farm, and I came from a farm myself, and I thought, boy, all these years later, and she's such a great, fantastic player, and the feeling I got of being able to do something with her, and hopefully, you know, pass on something to her without even having to give a lecture, just to be that way, that was a continuation of what had been given to us. And that's what's so nice to see that Dan felt the same way, that he felt, without saying it, how important it was to also pass on what we were blessed to receive to other people coming up, just to make them feel that they were appreciated and that they were respected, and it was their time to carry on that torch. And I think to the extent that that's happening, we can be hopeful no matter what happens in the rest of the daily news that we see.
What a marvelous attitude to have. And, you know, you're still a young composer, by the way. You have lots of work ahead of you. And before I turned on the microphones, you mentioned that one of your new projects is actually going to channel some different creativity. You're about to step on stage.
Yes. Well, again, this is one of those flukes. I was invited, as I was by Dan recently, never knowing that was going to happen. In this case, by Estelle Parsons, who's a great actress, you know, who won the Oscar for Bonnie and Clyde, has done so much great work in the theater. Mm-hmm. And she's one of the people who leads the Actors Studio now. And she called me and said she'd like me to work on Uncle Vanya with her. And I knew her since the 50s. I said, what kind of music do you think it should be? And she said, no, I want you to be a character in the play who also plays some music named Telegin, T-E-L-E-G-I-N. I said, you mean to act? And she said, yes. I said, oh, my goodness. I said, I spent my entire life admiring actors and all the things I did in the theater for so many years. I loved every second of it, but I never dreamed. And the documentary films I've been in, and ones like Oh My Daisy, really, that wasn't acting. I was just showing up. And I said, you know, that'd be it. So it was a tremendous challenge. And the actors there were so terrific, who were members of the act, that are real, real full-time serious actors. It was like suddenly being asked to play with the New York Philharmonic or something, just to be part of it. And it's so much fun doing it, and such a great bunch of people, and such a wonderful play. It's a whole new experience, and I hope it can help to make me a better composer and a better performer in general for music and everything else that I do. And also to understand, just to be part of something that's beautiful is a real thrill and a real education.
Composer, performer, and all-around arty guy, David Amram. You can hear more about his friendship with Dan Wakefield on Uncle Dan's Story Hour on Monday night, July 3rd at 9, and after that on WFYI.org. Every week, a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long talks five songs with someone from our community. Here's this week's journey.
I'm Kyle Long from Cultural Manifesto. My guest today is the great Indianapolis electronic music producer, Adam Jay. He has a fantastic new album out titled Maxia Zeta. It's available now on Bandcamp and Beatport. Adam, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
You have five songs to share with us today that are completely unrelated to this record, I think.
Absolutely.
But before we jump into those, give folks a little information about your new album, Maxia Zeta.
Yeah, it's out on Detroit Underground, a label from actually Windsor, Ontario. And it's available now on Beatport and Bandcamp. It's a futuristic electro album, the second electro album I've done, made all with analog and digital hardware synthesizers.
Great. What is your first song, your first piece of music for us today, Adam?
So it's a track by the Dutch electro producer Dexter that he did quite a long time ago on Clone Recordings, and the track's called iProgram. I mistakenly recorded this vinyl to CD at the wrong speed, so I've always known it to be played at a much lower speed, and I used to listen to it every day before I went into a job that I hated. It was like how I kind of just coped and prepared for that job.
And your second selection.
Track by The XX. The XX is a British band that I discovered listening to NPR on a road trip one time. The track's called Angels. It was the song that my wife Stephanie and I, it was our first dance at the reception of our wedding.
Shadow, it is more than I thought could exist. You move through the room like breathing was easy. If someone believed me, they would be as in love with you as I am. They would be as in love with you as I am.
Your third piece.
It's actually a whole album by the Dead Milkman, Lizard in My Backyard. It was a record that my sister had bought at Karma Records on the East Side in the 80s, and it's the record that I learned how to DJ with manually in the 90s.
And they still sell records at the Karma on the East Side on East Washington Street.
So I'm told.
Yeah. And your fourth selection, Adam Jay.
Dan Morgan's Flower Child on Sine Wave Recordings. It's a techno record. It was one of the first techno records that I discovered that had the sound that I liked. Dan Morgan turned out to be a lawyer who kind of just played with synthesizers a little bit and only put out a couple tracks, but this one really resonated with me.
And your your fifth and final selection, Adam Jay.
Nine Inch Nails, We're In This Together. That was a song where I could fully appreciate just how many sounds and layers you could fit onto a stereo track. I think you put something like 90 guitars in that wall of sound, and it really taught me a lot sonically about music.
A huge volume of releases on labels around the world. You've had over 50 vinyl EP releases. You've had over 100 digital releases on labels around the world, primarily in the techno genre. This new record, your latest, Maxia Zeta, is an electro record. Anything you want to say about working in this genre quickly as we close out?
Yeah, it's fun to kind of start fresh with something new and with a genre that I've always had a deep love for, but never felt like I had anything to say on the subject. And now finally, you know, 20 years later, feeling like I've got something to say on the subject. It's a joy to explore and feel like there aren't any boundaries. I feel like I have a lot of freedom with the music that I'm making these days.
Adam, what's the best way for our listeners to keep up with you online?
Yeah, Instagram.com/AdamJ, that's J-A-Y, or SoundCloud.com/AdamJ.
Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 8 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble, and today's contributors included Melissa Davis and Jill Dittmeyer. Hear The Art of the Matter Saturday mornings at 7 or join us Thursday nights at 8. And remember, you can always listen to and share our podcast at WFYI.org. Next week, we'll learn about a new professional ballet company, check in with a multimedia artist turned woodworker, and meet a pair of oncologists who have a secret identity as contemporary art curators. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All of that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.